Welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available 20-minute samples of recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians in social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new sample podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. In addition, you can access the full-length version of this and all NACSW podcasts at no cost simply by becoming a member of NACSW or by ordering a copy of this podcast at a reasonable cost on NACSW's online bookstore. We hope you enjoyed today's sample podcast. Welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians in social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast.
Thank you. Where'd she go? Wow, that was wonderful. Beautiful. Thank you, Laura. It's my pleasure. I get to introduce Dr. Bartlett this evening. So I'm going to give you a little bit of information about him. He's a very humble man, but he deserves for us to know a little bit of his accomplishments. Dr. Don Bartlett received his PhD in social work from the University of North Dakota and a PhD in education from Pacific University in Columbia, California. Prior to his traveling speaking ministry, Dr. Bartlett's professional career included over 20 years of working as a program director, administrator, direct care supervisor, child care worker, social worker, counselor, educator, and staff developer with troubled youth, minorities, families, and people with disabilities. Having received further training in theology and church ministries in Minnesota, Dr. Bartlett served as house church pastor and a metropolitan church, and as an associate pastor of the American Indian Evangelical Church. He is a commissioned minister and an author, and I know he's going to share some from his book this evening. And while he, I'm sure, is proud of his accomplishments, there were a few things that we discussed that he wanted me to make sure that I mentioned this evening. Dr. Bartlett is Native American, he is married, and he is the proud father of 8 children, 7 daughters and 1 son. So, no wonder he travels a lot. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Bartlett.
Wow. Wonderful. Touch my heart. Thank you. Thank you. There's a man in the audience tonight. He has heard me 5 times. I don't know why he came back. But I tell my children, I have groupies that follow me. How wonderful to be among so many Christians tonight. There was a time in my life when I tried to burn down the church in San Francisco. There was a time when I used to hate anything reflective of Christianity. And there was a time in my life when I vowed I would never, ever speak the name of Jesus. But then 2 women came into my world. And in my journey, showing me unparalleled compassion and servanthood, I'm here tonight. And as you come with me on my journey, I want to take you back 72 years to a small white community in North Dakota. and up in the hills 3 miles away, in a one-room log cabin, living in a world of poverty and hunger and isolation, are two Native American people, my mother and father. My mother ran away as a young girl from her Indian reservation, looking for a new life, wanting a family of her own, running away from poverty and alcoholism, child abuse, family violence. And as she ran away to this small white community near the Canadian border, she learned very quickly that she was not welcome in that small community, for she was Native American. And although there were 7 churches in that small white community, my mother was showing no compassion whatsoever. But there she met a very tall Native American French-Canadian man who happened to be a hunter and a fisherman, a strong man, a proud man. And as they married with their own hands, they built that one-room log cabin. And they wanted to have many, many children. And I happened to be the firstborn son. And as my mother and father waited to welcome me into their world, my father wanted a son to carry on the Bartlett name. And he wanted me to become everything he was, a hunter, a fisherman, an athlete, a runner. But as they brought me into that one-room log cabin, my father put me down quickly when he saw my face. I had only half a nose. I had no upper lip, and in the top of my mouth was a huge hole, what you and I clinically today refer to as a severe cleft palate condition. But in 1939 in rural America, we knew very little about my disability. And my mother and father were poor people, hungry people. And as my father put me down, as my father turned away from me in anger and disappointment, my father made a choice. A choice that my Native American family does not want me to share with you. My father ran away. And as he ran away, my father went into a world we now call alcoholism. A journey that he almost never came back from. And as he left my mother and me all alone in that one-room log cabin, my mother knew not what to do. She had no money. We had very little clothing. 7 churches in that small community, but none of them came into my world then. And so my mother put her arms around me, loving me, wanting me, valuing me. And as my father ran away, my grandmother came up into the hills. And when she saw my face, frightened, she ran into that small white community of 7 churches. And they would not help my grandmother. But she knew they had a doctor, a white doctor. And when the doctor came up into the hills, when the doctor saw my face, when he recognized the color of our skin, the doctor threw up his hands. And my mother told me years later, he whispered to her, "You're Indian. You have nothing. Send him away and let him die. He'll never talk. He'll never learn. Send him away now." My mother refused. The doctor became angry that a Native American woman would dare refute his recommendation. And so he went back into that small community of 7 churches. And he told the people what he wrote in the medical journal, and I have it in my book. The doctor wrote, "Freak, Indian, cleft palate, baby." And when the white people heard that, out of this, lacking all compassion, they came up into the hills. They took me away from my mother, and they told my mother she would never see me again. They sent me to another community 22 miles away, put me in a hospital. waiting for the baby to die. No medical intervention whatsoever. Until a young medical intern from the university 100 miles away, wanting to be a doctor one day, when he met the Indian baby, when he saw the face, he demanded that they provide me with help. And so they took the left-hand part of my nose, they pulled me over to the right-hand side of my face, leaving me with a very flat nose for 17 years of my life. They pulled my upper lip together, but they did absolutely nothing with that hole in the top of my mouth. And that young medical intern, for whatever reason, demanded that the welfare department return me to my mother. And as I went back to live with my mother in that small one-room log cabin, in that world of poverty and malnutrition, hunger, isolation, what my former community does not want me to make public. For 9 years, my mother hung on to me alone. The welfare department did nothing. The seven churches did nothing. And as that baby began growing into a young boy, I remember well watching my mother loving me, pointing at the leaves that fell from the trees, and helping me to understand the nature in our environment. I remember my mother going down in the river and coming back with a bucket of water and dropping water down that hole so her boy would live another day. And when we were hungry, when the welfare worker refused to provide the food, my mother went down to that small community late at night, stealing food from the farmers that we might eat. 9 years of valuing my life, protecting me, trying to teach me, wanting me to learn, wanting me to talk. I'll never forget that early journey. And one day, out of my hunger, I went down into that small community. And there I found an isolated area right by the railroad tracks. I saw the white people throwing away food they did not want. And out of my hunger, as I went into the dump ground, picking up the food with my hands, pushing it down that hole because I did not know how to chew my food then. But the hunger went away momentarily. And as I went back to the dump ground, I found warm clothing. I found written materials. And as I took them home, my mother knew I wanted to learn. I wanted to survive. And so my mother followed me one day to the dump ground. And when she saw me playing with the rats, my mother became angry and wanted me to have real friends. My mother took a risk. She took me into that small community. They had two elementary schools, a parochial one and a public one. And because of her faith, my mother took me to the parochial school, assuming they would help her child. When I remember that part of her journey, when the Roman Catholic nun took my ear and turned it harshly, trying to make me speak, showing no compassion. And as my mother took me away from that, she brought me to the public school, and fearful that they might reject her child, she went back to our log cabin in the hills. I remember being 9 years old, nonverbal, Native American, and standing on the playground when the children gathered around me, looking at me, laughing at me, bullying me, taking my hair and throwing me in the building, hitting me. And I'll never forget her. What we now call peer pressure. Her friend told her to do it. And as she spit all over my face, I ran into the school looking for a teacher. And when the children found me in their classroom, they picked up their pencils, what we now call school violence, and poked me in the back, pulling my hair, making me cry. And I hung on to my desk in fear. The first teacher I ever had, a woman who went to church religiously, took me by my shoulders. And I, being 9 years of age, could not understand why. She locked me in a janitor's closet, refusing to help a child like me. Never went to the second grade. When I entered the third grade, the teacher told the children, don't look at him, don't play with him. He's Indian. He can't learn. And after school that day, when the children gathered around me, when they took me up into the hill, when they tied my hand behind my back to a tree, when they hit me in the face until the blood ran down on my shirt, I began to hate my absent father. I began to hate my disability. I began to hate the color of my skin. And I began to hate white people. An old man, a homeless man, rejected by that same community, now living up in the hills near the Indian people. He found me and untied the rope, set me free. And as I ran home that night, I met my father for the first time. Tall, strong, alcoholic, overwhelmed by violence. And when he saw my face, when I could not speak, when he asked about the blood, my father took me. And what we now call child abuse, my father threw me, my father kicked me, and like the children in the public school, my father made a fist. And he could not stop. And as my mother tried to intervene, what we now call family violence, she became a victim as my father took her. And I shall never forget watching my mother thrown into a window of that one-room shack. When I heard my mother screaming for help, I broke away from my father. I ran into that small white community of 7 churches, breaking into them, looking for refuge, hoping somebody would intervene, breaking into the grocery store, stealing the money, going down into the roller skating rink, eating candy bars night after night, trying to survive in the best way I knew how, becoming a homeless, juvenile delinquent, an angry child. And as I broke into the elementary public school one night, I took a library book and went back to the classroom, wishing I could comprehend, holding the book, I fell asleep on the floor. Never in my childhood did I ever think that choice would result in the damage I met the next morning, psychologically, when two white policemen came to the school at the invitation of the principal. They took me by my hair. They locked me in the trunk of their automobile, making fun of my disability, making fun of my racial heritage, and then taking the alcohol late that night, looking at me in the cell. I heard one policeman tell the other, the doctor told me he'll never talk. Let's do it. I was only a child. And as they walked into my cell, what some people...
Thank you for listening today to this 20-minute sample of NACSW's Podcast of the Month featured selection. Just a reminder that you can access the full-length version of this and all NACSW podcasts at no cost by simply becoming a member of NACSW or by ordering a copy of this podcast at a reasonable cost on NACSW's online bookstore. We also hope that you will consider participating in additional NACSW activities and events, including NACSW's upcoming convention in the fall, our quarterly audio conference workshops, which provide CEUs accredited by the Association of Social Work Boards, and our online continuing education program. Also, we invite you to join NACSW's Facebook group or our Facebook fan page. For additional information about these and other NACSW benefits and services, you can go to our website at www.nacsw.org. Thanks again for listening in to our podcast session today.